Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast powered by betonline.ag. NFL week 9, the topic of debate today. I am, of course, your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one who does the real heavy lifting around here and gives you the information you need to become a better sports better, the one, the only Payne Insider.
What's going on?
Not much, man. A little Halloween hangover around these parts.
You went out last night.
I did not go out last night. There's no going out during football season, especially on weeknights. It was a candy come down more than anything else. Probably had too many of those little snack pack, fun size, whatever they call it these days, that we were handing out to the neighborhood kids.
I'm not buying it.
Nope. You don't have to buy anything. In bed by 12, up by 4:30. Normal operating procedure on Thursdays, the busiest day of football season.
Oh, man. You're selling us a bill of goods here, I feel like. You're always out and about.
There is no bill of goods being sold. There is no out and about in my day-to-day right now. I am a boring individual committed to our craft and trying to find winners because the Baltimore Ravens have frustrated me to no end.
What did you dress up as?
So, I mean, for those folks that watch the show, I went full penguin, not quite Sidney Crosby-esque, for Lock It In.
I saw pictures. I almost didn't show up to this podcast because you're that embarrassing.
Oh, that costume was tremendous. It received all sorts of tremendous accolades. Let's put it that. But the costume, to hand out candy in the neighborhood, the girlfriend came up with a Dunkin' Donuts costume. So what it was an inflatable inner tube donut, like a pool floaty, a basketball jersey, you know, wind pants, headband. You got to try and sell it a little bit.
Yeah, the headband. That's interesting.
You know, you got to try and take care of the flow. I mean, I'm chopped up pretty good these days, but you still got to get the flow out of the eyes. It still doesn't help my jumper, but we'll leave it at that.
There you go. So, big night at the Furman household.
Yeah, what can I say? You know, living dangerously around these parts at 36 years of age. Living dangerously. But, all right, Payne, topic at hand, obviously the NFL. And I want to spend about 12 seconds on what we saw Monday night as the Buffalo Bills came up short in their quest to cover as 14-point dogs against New England. Anything that we can take away from that game, whether it's New England's struggles in the red zone or Buffalo's ineptitude offensively and what we're going to see from the Bills going forward?
I didn't really think the Patriots played that poorly. I thought it was a good spot for Buffalo. I think it's a tough defense. I think everyone gets this idea of Buffalo being really bad, and they are, but it's mostly because their offense is bad. The defense is very good. I expected them to show pretty well there. Fourth most efficient defense. They face top 10 schedule of offenses, so I wouldn't be concerned at all about the Patriots offense. And right now I'm looking at this, still eighth converting red zone trips into touchdowns even after Monday night. But I think the big takeaway there was New England didn't have Sony Michel, and they really value James White, so they weren't going to run the ball with James White. That's why Cordell Patterson was getting a lot of carries. They just don't want to beat up and put the mileage on James White. He's that valuable to them. So without Sony Michel, it's a non-existent ground game for the Patriots. And it is a passing league in 2018, but you look at some of the most efficient red zone offenses, they can still run the ball because the space gets shrunk. Defenses don't have to defend as much area. So you can be the greatest passing team, but you really need a complementary ground game to be efficient in the red zone. And the Patriots just didn't have that as even an option on Monday night, I didn't think.
Yeah, Cordarrelle Patterson not going to be here between the tackles runners, especially in short yardage from what we've seen. But, of course, a very workmanlike performance they cover in the process, and New England moves on to a marquee matchup in Sunday Night Football against the Green Bay Packers, one that we'll talk about towards the end of the show. But real quickly, too, to recap the trade deadline, I mean, we saw Demaryius Thomas get shipped off to Houston. We said Golden Tate get traded to the Eagles, Amari Cooper a little bit earlier to the Dallas Cowboys, Clinton Dix to the Redskins, and Dante Fowler to the Rams from Jacksonville. Of any of the players that moved at the deadline, was there anyone that you feel is going to be especially impactful for these teams in their quest to make the postseason or maybe have bigger aspirations and hoist the Lombardi Trophy?
I am not a huge Demaryius Thomas guy, but I think Houston had to do something. That was evident. You know, he's not a burner like Will Fuller, so this isn't one of those even trade-offs. You'd much rather have Will Fuller, but I think, you know, you have to kind of tip your hat to Houston here, going out, attempting to help the young quarterback. When you look at what would be opposite of Hopkins, there wouldn't really be anything at that point. The problem here is, and it's the first thing that I spotted as soon as I saw Will Fuller go down against the Dolphins, and I was a little stunned. It was an awkward landing. I didn't think it was that serious as an ACL, but when I started to kind of parse out some of these numbers, and I'm sure the Houston organization saw the same thing and said, hey, we absolutely have to move on a receiver. You look at Deshaun Watson's 14 starts in the NFL, 7-3 when Fuller plays, 1-3 when he doesn't. Offense averages 60 yards more, averages 1.6 more touchdowns per game. Completion percentage for Watson up 3%. Yards per attempt up 1.5 yards. Passer rating up 25 points. Houston scores nearly 12 points more per game with Fuller in the lineup with these Deshaun Watson starts. So it was a perfect pair because we know Deshaun Watson likes to throw the ball down the field. One of the quarterbacks in the NFL that attempts the most passes 20 or yards or more down the field. So this was a huge loss in Will Fuller. Not sure Demaryius Thomas can fill that void, but it's certainly a help because the offense struggles without Will Fuller.
And of course, Demaryius Thomas won't have to travel all too far for his Texans debut should he be suited up, as Denver will take on Houston this coming Sunday. Before we get into the actual games, Payne, a little housekeeping around these parts. Another contest winner that I know you're excited to announce?
Yeah, absolutely. The Week 8 Bet the Board 5K contest winner is J_Bo81. Obviously, he went a perfect 5-0, and he nailed the Monday Nighter perfectly. 32 points scored exactly between the Pats and Bills, so he is the Week 8 winner. Keep getting those picks in. Spreads are up for Week 9. We have the weekly prizes, so there's no reason not to submit your picks. And obviously, you know, it's down to the wire right now. A lot of teams competing for that first prize. It's close up top towards the leaderboard, so get your picks in. We will also have, I want to say, let's call it Week 11. We'll do another iTunes winner, so put those 5-star reviews in and leave a nice little sentence or two review. Once you do that, you're automatically entered. And we'll roll it through the randomizer in Week 11. NFL will pick another iTunes contest winner. So get those 5-star reviews in to qualify.
Sing the praises of the Bet the Board podcast. Get that gospel out there. We appreciate all you guys do for us as our loyal listeners and our core following. Of course, Dave Mason will be along to talk a little house liabilities. Maybe we'll get another epic Patriots rant as he discusses what couldn't have been, Payne, I imagine, a very good weekend for the house during Week 8 when you look at some of those results. But with all of that being on the docket, let's get into some of the games, and we will start with what's going to take place in the Twin Cities, where it's Minnesota, a 4.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on the game, 48.5, when division rival Detroit comes in. When you look at this rivalry, the Lions have won 6 out of the last 10 meetings since 2013. You have to go all the way back to September 8th, 2013, that a favorite in this particular series covered a number greater than 4. But I ask you this with Detroit, was the performance last weekend against Seattle more indicative of what we're going to see going forward, or had the Lions build up in the dominant effort we saw against the Dolphins, or does the truth lie somewhere in between?
Yeah, probably somewhere in between. It's not a great football team. It's an average football team, I would think. That's basically, when you look at all their metrics offensively, they're certainly average. Defensively, they just haven't been very good. They went and got Snacks. Who knows? Maybe he'll be a play a larger role this week and moving forward, but wasn't good, didn't stop the run. You know, listen, this was a team the last few years that was built on offense, and they're kind of changing how they run that offense. It's average. Everything about it's average. 5.5 yards per play. We've talked about the O-line improving. It has, but they're 20th in the NFL in rushing success rate, just 46% of runs grade successful. They're slightly above league average in passing success rate. They're not overly explosive on offense. Everything's just kind of meh for them offensively. Then you go out and you trade Golden Tate. I am not, you know, I'm a little higher, I think, on Golden Tate than some people. I know everyone envisioned his play being down this year, but he's actually on the field more snaps this season, 79%, than he did last season at 75%. Led the team in targets, yards, you name it. Now, I get he was off the field a lot in two wide receiver sets, so he was expendable in that regard, especially when you have Theo Riddick coming back. He'll probably play a larger role catching underneath passes. But he just wasn't being used in two wide receiver sets. They weren't going to re-sign him in the offseason. His contract was up, so go get a third rounder for him. That makes a lot of sense. But what it means for this offense moving forward, maybe mentally, emotionally, it's tough to see you trade a guy like that when you're only a game behind in the division, and the team you're looking up at, you're playing this weekend. So that will be interesting to see how this team kind of rallies. Hopefully, they show some energy and effort here. The line signals that they should, because this line is short. And we have seen professional money on Detroit at this point, which is intriguing. But again, it's been a tight matchup, as you alluded to.
Well, when we talk about professional money coming in on the Lions, I mean, so much of the line movement on Sunday Night Football with the Saints going from a 2.5-point underdog to a 2.5-point favorite against these same Vikings was predicated on a lot of the absences, both on the offensive side and defensively. It looks by all accounts, Payne, that we're going to see Xavier Rhodes out there, which is massive for the Vikings secondary, especially against any semblance of a Lions vertical passing attack they want to have. But the bigger injury may be on the Vikings offensive side. It seems that Stephon Diggs' status remains one of the bigger mysteries since he played the full game against the Saints, and then all of a sudden they come out and they say he's dealing with a core muscle strain.
Yeah. I mean, defensively, let's go back to that. Do we know Xavier Rhodes is really playing, or is that just something Mike Zimmer is saying?
It might just be something he's saying. I mean, he was, out there for walkthrough most of the week, and then it was widely speculated he was going to try and give it a go, and you shot me a text about 40 minutes before kickoff and said, nope, no chance he's getting out there.
Yeah, I mean, there was no chance he was playing last week ever. It'll be interesting to see if he goes. I would think maybe it's a division game. It's very important. It was more important than last week's game because it is a division game. He tries to gut it out. I don't know. Let's see how effective he is. Again, it's a position where you got to cut and do all that stuff. It's tough to have an ankle injury, tough to have a foot injury. Sendejo was out there at practice on Wednesday for the first time in a couple weeks. Let's see if he plays. I do like Linval Joseph and Griffin playing, so I think that helps a little bit. Offensively, Diggs was a surprise. Did not practice yesterday, is having the rib injury. I don't know what that means. It certainly would be a big loss. The Vikings have to figure out what they're doing offensively. I hated the game plan last week. I hated it even more when they were down two scores. It was just like constantly running. It was weird. It was like head scratching. It's like they didn't plan for their opponent. Like you're an offense that can't run the ball. 40% of runs great successful, 50% of your passes great successful, and you're going against one of the best run defenses in the entire league. It was crazy. It was like the dumbest game plan I've ever seen. When you look at this, Minnesota is very efficient passing the ball, 10th in passing success. They don't hit the explosive, so if you know Diggs is out, that would be a big loss because he is kind of their explosive guy, very important to keep tabs on. You would think because the Lions have Darius Slay, if he could focus specifically on Thielen all game, it's going to be tough to operate. Like, Thielen isn't going to get shut out. He's that good. But when you have the 1-2 punch and Slay can follow Thielen around, it basically downgrades two positions. So it's a team that's struggling a little bit to run the ball. Maybe they get it going here, obviously, against a Lions defense that has not been very good stopping the run. It'll be vital to get that going. I would think probably that's the game plan this week. This is the team you want to run against, not the Saints. But if they get the ground game going, that should be a benefit. But really, you need to focus in on Diggs, see if he's playing. The Lions defense is interesting from this perspective. It would appear on the surface they can get after the quarterback. They're number one in adjusted sack rate. But I think Waters eventually going to meet its level here because they're second worst in pressuring the quarterback. So if the sacks drop, what does the defense look like? It's already not very good. That'll be the interesting thing here. You need to get pressure on that Vikings offense because they don't have a great offensive line. Cousins will throw you the ball eventually, but if he's got time, he's going to beat you and pick you apart.
Yeah, so many different things in play here. I mean, we know about the divisional implications here. You mentioned the Lions' run defense, the Vikings' inability to run the football. I mean, this is a team that doesn't even have 700 yards rushing this season, and 300-plus of those rushing yards came against lightweights in the 49ers and Cardinals. So curious to see how these teams elect to try and handle their business and ultimately where this number settles. I mean, with the price coming down, I have to think there would be buyback on the favor, but one never knows until you see the Vikings' final injury report. But from the NFC North pain to the AFC North, where it's the Baltimore Ravens, a 3-point favorite at betonline.ag, trending towards 2.5. Total in this game, 47.5. And I want to start with discussion of the number. It was just 2 short weeks ago, the Ravens closed about a 2.5 minus 20 favorite against the Saints. Now we see the Ravens coming in back-to-back losses, losers in 3 out of their last 4. Well, only a 3-point favorite or trending towards 2.5 against the Steelers. I mean, sure, are we led to believe, at least by the market, that somehow the Saints and Steelers playing on a neutral field is anywhere close to a pick 'em?
Well, let's kind of focus on the number here. What would you say the consensus number is right now?
I'm going to call the consensus here, knowing how much juice is attached to it. We'll call it a soft 3.
Okay. I guess we could go with that number. But obviously, like, 2.5 and 3 is a pretty big difference, right? If you make a game 3 and you're laying 2.5, you're going to be a profitable bettor. If you're making game 3 and laying 3, you're going to need to punch a time clock. So it's a big difference in number there. Personally, I have both New Orleans and Pittsburgh power rated at this very moment, both in my top 5. So I don't think it's that different. Listen, I think we could dive into the matchups for days here. I don't think it's necessary to break this game down. It's all about the health of these teams. That's partly why this number is a little off. I think in your mind, you had 4 guys on the Ravens offensive line miss practice on Wednesday. Yep. Defensively for the Ravens, I think they're a little spent right now. They haven't had their bye week yet. Marlon Humphrey is their best corner. He's missed time. Jimmy Smith, you know, as much as I like him, you know, he looks more like Jimmy Smits from NYPD Blue this season. Like, he's terrible. You know, the Achilles injury, it's a tough one to come back from, especially at that position. It requires you to cut. Jimmy Smith is graded out one of the worst corners in the NFL this season. So when you don't have Marlon Humphrey the last few weeks, you know, that's a problem. Tony Jefferson was a surprise no practice yesterday. Suddenly he's injured. So, I mean, this Baltimore team right now is pretty decimated. You look at the flip side, the Steelers come in rested, right? They had the bye and then effectively a walkthrough against the Browns last week. You know, they're going to have revenge here. You get Joe Hayden back for this game. He didn't play in the earlier matchup. Historically, you look at this number, I don't know what you could have made it, right? 13 in the last 21 decided by 3 or less. So these games we see is basically just home field advantage in there. The line indicates certainly Pittsburgh is the better team because Baltimore's home field advantage is worth about 3.5.
Yep.
You know, to me, it feels really easy, though, to take the +3 here. Have seen a little sharp money on that side. It is the public dog right now. Big Ben has struggled on the road. We've seen his numbers and what those splits look like. I do like how the Steelers' defense is trending right now, all the way up to 8th in defensive efficiency. They get after the quarterback, 5th in adjusted sack rate. So if Baltimore has multiple guys missing from that O-line, it could spell some trouble. I haven't done anything on this game. I won't until I see this injury report. The next 2 days are critical. Follow the injury reports today on Thursday afternoon, Friday as well. That's the biggest thing for me.
What do you make of the thumb injury or the finger injury, excuse me, for Big Ben on his non-throwing hand?
Well, there you go. I think that was the key you specified. It's an index finger non-throwing hand. He's going to play, obviously. I don't know if it's going to have much of an impact here. Now, I know if he goes out and lays an egg, everyone will be like, oh, the finger. No, he just hasn't been good on the road this season. This is certainly a tough matchup. It's going to be a physical game. I don't have much on this game, I'll be honest with you. I don't know what we're going to see. This is just one of those weird games where I would like to be on Pittsburgh because of these injuries. Just something feels a little off here.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about a Ravens team who's trying to figure things out right now, but the MASH unit, and you just can't go through games, I mean, with a patchwork offensive line, knowing how the Steelers apply pressure to opposing quarterbacks. One thing working in the Ravens' favor is they've had good success against the number when it comes to their divisional foe. 6-1-1 against the spread the last eight versus the Steelers. But if you don't have healthy bodies, that dynamic can change awfully, awfully quickly. So to another game pain in the afternoon time slot that I think is the crown jewel on the schedule. It's the New Orleans Saints playing host to the Los Angeles Rams. Your current number at betonline.ag is the Saints, a two-point favorite. Total on this game, 59.5. And I ask you this. I mean, how important can a November game be for playoff seeding, as these two teams, I'm sure, would love to have home field advantage throughout the NFC playoffs?
I think it's big. I think it's probably bigger for the Saints, right? They have one of the largest home field advantages in the NFL as it is. If they were to get home field advantage throughout the playoffs, I think that's look out, right? I mean, their whole season's about the Super Bowl. They've made moves that signal, hey, we're all in this season. I would venture to say during the playoffs, with as crazy as that crowd is, you bump it up another half point, you're trending towards 4 points of home field advantage for the Saints in the playoffs. So I think it's bigger that they have home field advantage. Now, you would know the West Coast better than me. The Rams don't seem to have a ton of home field advantage, but
they have zero. They have zero.
I could see it trend a little better because that would be the thing to do out in LA that time of year, right? You know, if the Rams are in the playoffs, everyone kind of just follows trends out that way. So you would follow that trend of like, hey, going to the games maybe. I don't know. But I would certainly think this is more impactful to have home field advantage for the Saints.
I mean, the Rams are going to go into a little bit of uncharted territory. It's the first time an undefeated team at 8-0 or better will be an underdog since way back in 2015. That was the Carolina Panthers against the Dallas Cowboys, a game that I'm pretty sure we had the Cowboys in on Thanksgiving and was over about two series into the game. Best combined record for two opponents week 9 or later since 2013. But when we look at some of the on-field matchups, and we may as well start with the Rams' offense against the Saints' defense. The Saints were dealt a pretty big blow, losing rookie pass rusher Marcus Davenport. You know, initial reports were he was expected to play. Now he's going to be out a month with his toe injury. The Rams' passing attack, I mean, Cooper Kupp, I have to operate under the assumption he's going to be out there. Do the Saints have enough in the defensive backfield to slow the Rams down if they get going offensively through the air?
It's possible, right? And I think we kind of lose touch on how good the Saints' offense is, right? I mean, we know they're good, but I think the Rams get kind of propped up. It's a fantastic offense. But when you look at the adjusted net yards, this Rams offense is actually nearly a full yard worse than the Saints. So that was pretty interesting to me. You mentioned Cooper Kupp. McVay insinuated he's playing, that he's going to be on his way back. I think that should help some things. Because when you look at this game, it's going to be the trench battle. Who wins it on that side of the ball? You have, you know, through 8 weeks, the Saints have done a fantastic job kind of just choking out opposing ground games. They force teams to be one-dimensional. So right now, 42% of runs grade successful against the Saints. That's fourth best in the NFL. They're third in explosive runs. They're number one in opponent yards per rush attempt, 3.2 yards. That's nearly half a yard better than the second best team. So if Gurley can't get going and it's all on Goff, it'll be fun to see if he can shoulder that load. The Saints' pass defense, obviously, can be had, although they're trending up a touch. They're allowing 8.3 yards per pass attempt on the season. Last year, 6.6, so it's a huge discrepancy, but the last 3 weeks, 7.1. They'll be fully tested here. Let's see if they can show up in a spot like this. I would think you're going to have to be able to run the ball here. I just don't know if you can be one-dimensional in a game like this. I'm not sure they can. If Gurley gets going, the Rams are going to have a field day offensively, I would think, even with the addition of Eli Apple. It's going to be a tough offense to stop if McVay is two-dimensional. At that point, he just has fun and he toys with you. But if you can stop Gurley, and all signs point to that being the case, let's see if Goff can prove himself here. He's had a fantastic season. All the numbers are up. All the metrics are up. Let's see him go on a road in a hostile environment and win a game for the team.
On the other side of the ball, the Saints offense, you mentioned nearly yard per play better from a net yardage standpoint than what you're going to see from the Rams. The Rams defense, they've shown vulnerability and they've shown flashes. I'm not even going to call it brilliance, of being average. How do we try and assess the Saints offense? I mean, this was a team that was number 5 running the football in 2017. They're tied for the 17 spot so far in 2018. Of course, Mark Ingram still kind of getting up to game speed. But Drew Brees, if you don't put pressure on him, we know he can dissect you like a consummate surgeon back there. Can the Rams apply pressure and get Drew Brees off his spot?
The Saints offense needs to be aggressive when they throw. That's the biggest thing for me. Now, I know Ted Ginn's out and a lot of people will laugh, but he is a dynamic, deep weapon. And when he catches it, he's very good. I was stunned Sunday night. And I was thinking to myself through large stretches of that game how inept Sean Payton was for that specific game. The Vikings secondary was just an absolute mash unit. And Brees attempted one pass downfield that came on the opening drive to Michael Thomas for 20 yards. Every other throw Brees made was less than 15 yards. And then you look at this week, Tlaib still out, Marcus Peters. I know he's the sports center guy because he makes the plays, but he loves to gamble. He loves to keep his eyes on the quarterback, and he can be picked on. You can hit big plays through the air against the Rams defense. They're 29th in explosive pass defense. You have to take some shots here. And then you would look at just how poor the Rams are defending the run. 26th in rushing success rate defense. Aaron Jones went through them, like a knife through warm butter. I think there's going to be a possibility here that you could get the play-action game going, especially if Ingram and Kamara, you know, get it moving between the tackles. But again, there should be some plays and some attempts to throw over the top. You saw the Packers last week, 6 explosive pass plays. Now, your question on pressure. We can kind of revert back to a topic we introduced a few weeks ago. Drew Brees, 5'11", where you want to pressure him and where he hates pressure is right up the middle. This is where we find out how valuable Donald and Sue are paired together. These are the kinds of games where they can win them for the team, and you're going to find out that they're worth every single cent because they have an ability to wreck an entire game. If Donald and Sue can get pressure all game up the middle and not just take Brees down for a sack, but force him to slide left and right and reset to throw, it's going to go in a long ways because Drew Brees has a tougher time throwing over interior pressure. He has a tougher time just throwing over guys. We saw the interception. Now, I know the pressure came off the edge, but Drew was lined up right. Pressure came left, and he was forced to basically throw over the defender, and he just airmails the ball. Jesus, can't even speak. Airmails the ball for an interception. So if you can get pressure directly in his face because of his size and stature, he just doesn't like it. And this is the kind of game where you envision paying Sue and paying Donald that kind of money. They're going to get pressure in this game.
You think we see any major movement in terms of the side or total? I mean, I know the side actually opened up with the Rams, a slight favorite. We talk about it all the time. You can see a big move, but if it's not through key numbers, it really doesn't change the fundamental handicap of things, aside from maybe using it as a teaser leg. Here or there, total sits at 59.5. I believe it's flickered to 60, and we've seen a little bit of ping-ponging back and forth there as well.
Well, as you mentioned, through zero, it just doesn't mean as much. When I looked at this game initially on the look-ahead, I believe it was Rams minus 2.5. You know, suddenly if you can get to 3, it makes some sense. At this number, it's exactly what I made it. I made this game New Orleans minus 1. So I don't see a ton of value. And listen, in the NFL, like, you're not going to have these massive point discrepancies. You're looking more at matchups. You're looking more at situations. You're looking at how teams can identify and exploit areas and things of that nature, because you're just, it's not college football. You're not going to have a line that's 4 points off. You're not going to have a line that's 7 points off. So a lot of these lines are going to be fairly accurate. And again, it's about identifying some matchup issues. So again, I think it comes down to two things. Can the Rams run? Can the Rams get interior pressure? If they can do those things, they're going to win. If they can't, the Saints are going to win. It's that simple. Those are the two matchups that will determine who wins this game. But the number to me, again, is perfect. I made the Saints minus 1.
Should be a great game to watch, no doubt, and the perfect appetizer for the main event, which will be Sunday night. Aaron Rodgers locking horns with Tom Brady for only the second time during his NFL career. And you're looking at New England in this spot, a 5.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game paying 56.5. And when you look over the last decade, New England and Green Bay have the best records in their respective conferences. New England 118-34, which is just mind-boggling to think about. Green Bay 97-52-2. In the one career meeting, Aaron Rodgers beat Tom Brady way back in Week 13, 2014. The only active players right now in the NFL with multiple MVP awards. But enough about the past. When we look at the present and into the future for Sunday, what are some of the matchups you're most intrigued by, and where do you think this game can be won or lost?
Let's start with the Packers offense. They're trending up, obviously. I like what I saw last week. 7.7 yards per pass attempt, had the 6 explosives. as I mentioned. They got the ground game going, which I thought they could do. 63% of runs graded successful. It's clear Aaron Jones needs more touches. He's getting them now. You remove Montgomery from that equation, I think you see more Aaron Jones. Now, the Packers overall this season, I think it will shock some people, but they're actually a very good running team. They just don't do it a lot. They're second in rushing success rate. I would think you're going to run the ball a little bit more here, protect your defense a bit. Now, the question here is if Bill Belichick is really a genius, and I think he is, obviously. If he sees Aaron Jones on the field a ton, we're going to start seeing some blitzes because Jones is a liability in protection. So that'll be interesting to see. When you look at how this Packers offense is trending, as I kind of lost my thought there, it correlates to the health of Aaron Rodgers. He just looks more healthier. You throw on the all 22. It's not just the mobility. It's him stepping into throws now. Before, he wasn't. That Packers offense is now sixth overall in efficiency despite facing the fifth toughest schedule of defenses. Now you get a Patriots defense that's 16th in defensive efficiency. It should be easier to crack. So I think there's going to be some success here, obviously, for this Packers offense. I think they're trending in the right direction. This is a good matchup for them. If they want to run it, I know Patriots are a little bit better defending the run, but I think you'll still be able to run the ball a little bit here as a complementary tool. And I really just like the progression of this Packers offense and their weapons outside. I like the young kids. I'm glad that McCarthy's playing them. I like St. Brown. So I think I love Scantling. I think those two playing them more. I know Cobb showed up a little bit better this past week, but I like the young guys play them more, and the offense is really starting to trend positively.
Yeah, you mentioned some of the young guys getting more burn. It also has been to the benefit of Devontae Adams, who's top 10 in receptions, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns, on pace to break all sorts of Packers records, and that's largely because defenses can't commit all of their resources to him when you have other players stepping up and giving Rodgers viable receiving threats down the field, across the middle, and wherever else he elects to throw the football. On the other side, I mean, you've talked about it great lengths, and I think everybody else in sports media is starting to latch onto the narrative that this Green Bay secondary needs Jaire Alexander. And last weekend, I mean, he produced 7 tackles, a career-high 5 pass breakups, including 3 while covering former Patriots receiver Brandon Cooks. Maybe we're going to see the debut of Breshad Breeland, of course, the Packers dealing Ha Ha Clinton Dix. But what do we make of Green Bay's secondary and their ability to clamp down on a New England passing attack, which, you know, sometimes I think can be a little bit vulnerable, and it hasn't looked nearly as explosive as both of us anticipated when they went out there and ultimately signed Josh Gordon?
The passing attack, you know, Gordon dropped a few balls this past week. Hopefully, like, listen, he's got to get his mind in the right place. Showed up late to a team meeting this past week. So, I mean, that's got to get figured out. Like, Brady's already put his arm around him. Like, you know, come on, guy. Like, you got to do this. You got to get over the hump. So when you mention the Packers secondary, it's pretty good. They haven't faced a lot of great passing attacks. Last week they did, and in the second half they got had a little bit. But right now, third in the NFL, they allow just 42% of passes to grade successful. Jaire Alexander, him being back, makes them very good through the air. I know his people listen to this podcast, so we've been praising him. They like that. He seemed to show out right now. When I look at potentially how you want to attack the Packers defense, I think it's on the ground. You know, the question becomes short week, travel, physical game against Buffalo. Can they be physical again on this short turnaround? I think the status of Sony Michel this week is very important. He's practiced the last 2 days, although Wednesday, I was told, was yesterday, was just a walkthrough for the Patriots. Sony Michel's body is much needed here because you can run on the Packers. They're 21st in rushing success rate defense. We know, as I alluded to earlier at the top of the show, New England doesn't want to run James White into the line of scrimmage a bunch. Cordell Patterson isn't that guy. So if Sony Michel doesn't go in this, I think he is. I would think this game would probably close 4.5, not just because Sony Michel's worth that to the spread. Obviously he's not, but it changes the entire way the Patriots offense would operate and how it would attack the Packers defense. So Sony Michel is vital for this game. He's vital for the New England Patriots to have offensive success here.
One thing that I found interesting, Payne, in doing a little bit of reading and research, trying to dissect some of the quotes out there and knowing that the travel situation isn't exactly ideal for Green Bay going from the West Coast back to the Midwest and ultimately out to the East Coast for that late kickoff. I mean, Rodgers pretty much came out and said it gave him a ton of confidence last week, and that's what they needed right now. They have to win one of these signature games upcoming on their schedule. And he went on to continue and said, "We all felt after the game, based on the record of the LA Rams, if that's the best team in the league, we're not far off." Oftentimes you can see, you know, the figurehead and or the talisman for a franchise coming out and saying that. But it felt like Rodgers genuinely believes that this team is a play here, a play there away from not only being a viable playoff contender, but being mentioned in the same breath as the elite teams like the Kansas City Chiefs, like the Patriots, like the Rams, like the Saints. I mean, are you buying Green Bay's potential upside in the NFC and the overall big picture as well?
They are. And how I read that quote was, "It's time to jump on my back, boys." And that's what I took from it. He's starting to get healthier. He sees the potential of the offense. He likes the young weapons there. He's hammered the table for Aaron Jones. More touches. Now Montgomery's out, and obviously that was pushed out a little bit by Rodgers. He didn't like not getting a last crack at the ball there. But he likes the young receivers. I think he knows what he has. The offensive line is getting healthier as well. We talked about, you know, the sack rate there, him getting sacked a bunch, but the pressure rate was good. But again, I think as he gets healthier, a little bit more mobile, that sack rate will drop because the pressure rate doesn't really quantify there being that many sacks. So I think he likes what he has on the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, you know, it's a little bit of a kick in the junk, I would think, losing HaHa Clinton Dix, because he is a guy that's very good. Now, he was a locker room distraction, so they got rid of him. They weren't going to re-sign him, so it made sense that way. You mentioned Breland potentially coming back. Hopefully he's healthy. If he's healthy, he's a help. I just know a lot of teams worked him out, didn't think he was healthy enough, and teams that really needed cornerback play. Now, he hasn't came out, and, you know, he's been kind of working his way back through it the last few weeks. Hopefully he can contribute and help that defense out. I liked what I saw, at least initially, from that defense last week. They were inspired. They were stopping the run, much to our chagrin. They did a very good job early on. In the second half, you know, McVay just, you know, twisted McCarthy's brain into a pretzel and things changed, and they were able to move the ball offensively. Those adjustments certainly played a huge role and they got back in the game, but he's spot on. That's one of the toughest teams. You're in their backyard and you probably should have won that game. You would have had a chance to win it had you had the ball back with you know, a couple minutes to go. But that quote to me was all about, hey, this is a must-win game. It's time to hop on my back, boys.
Sometimes that's what you have to do as the face of the franchise, and Aaron Rodgers is just that in Green Bay. Should be an outstanding way to close up an otherwise so-so slate of games. But before we get to, of course, the marquee event of Week 9, Payne, which is naturally the 49ers and Raiders, we have a gentleman that'll be more than happy to weigh in about how Week 8 unfolded for the house. It's Thursday. It's the NFL football season, so that can mean only one thing. We're not only joined by Dave Mason, who you can follow on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL, but given the final score and what we saw transpire in Orchard Park on Monday night with the Buffalo Bills and New England Patriots, Dave, we're ready to get our second Patriots rant for the second time in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that was a bad one. Biggest win of the year for the players for a single game, and followed the disaster on Sunday. Well, overall, it was a huge weekend for the players. Sunday was big, and then Monday night just, I mean, if we won that game Monday night, it'll wipe out. We would have scored a profit. It was that big. It would have wiped out all the players' profits Sunday, and we would have been in the black a little bit for the weekend. But no, it turned Sunday's profits and doubled it and even then some. So congrats to the players for another winning week. That's 2 weeks in a row. The NFL started off great for the house, and now the tides are turning a little bit. The players are coming back, so we'll see what happens next week.
What were some of the worst results on Sunday, Dave, that got the momentum rolling against you guys before it all hit a crescendo on Monday night?
I mean, they started early. The Eagles game was huge early on at those 9:30. England games are great because there's so much action on them. But the week before, we won big. And last weekend, we lost big. Texans were big for the players, you know, and it just went on from there. The Packers game, that was big. I mean, that was, you know, everybody's talking about the Todd Gurley, should he went in, should he not went in, and, you know, I was talking to my guys, and, it, you know, we needed the Rams for the spread, but if he did go in, then we would have got middle, the more teasers in, over, all that stuff. So, you know, end of day, it's like, we would have lost either way. It's just we probably lost a little bit less of him not going in. So, but that was a loser, too. So it was a loser either way. Winners for the house. Saints Vikings under. Buccaneers, thankfully, Fitzmagic got us the cover there, and Monday Night Football under. So yeah, when I'm talking about two out of our three best winners were unders, you know, we had a pretty bad week there. Usually I'm just talking spreads, but our biggest winners were unders. So congrats to
Dave,
the players.
Question
go,
for you.
Go for it.
Do you find when you have the players with a massive Sunday, the liability for Monday night ratchets up a bit?
Well, the action definitely does, and you know, so the liability, it depends on if it's going to be a huge public play or not. You know, if you got a huge.
So that was the perfect storm, a big Sunday, and then the Patriots in primetime.
Exactly. It's a double whammy. You know what I mean? If it was one of those kind of games where, you know, there's not two-way action, the action is going to be great, but it won't be that much of a big decision. But, and you know, works out well for the house sometimes. The week before is a perfect example, right? The week before, we got killed on Sunday, and, you know, that we needed that everybody was fading the Giants, and then they got it done for it. So, you know, it's just works out both ways, but congrats to the players.
That didn't sound very genuine, but when we look at week 9,
whatever.
When we transition to week 9.
I just put it all behind me. Let's go on. Let's move on. Next question.
Week 9. Here it is. Week 9, baby. What does it look like so far in terms of sharp action or public liabilities that'll have the books with a severe rooting interest?
Roger that. Sharp action. Raiders tonight, +3, -110 or better. They're currently getting 2.5. Lions +5, they're now 4.5. Lions under 50, that's down to 48.5. Atlanta under 47.5, it's down to 46.5. Seattle at a pick'em, they're currently 2-point favorites. Public, Raiders tonight, 67% of the bettors are on the Raiders. 87% of the bettors are on Vikings on Sunday. Uh-oh, the big one. Chiefs, 93% of the bettors are on the Chiefs so far versus the Browns. Can't wait for that one.
Who didn't see that one coming?
Yeah, right? Steelers, 83% on the Steelers, which surprised me. That will come down, I'm pretty sure. Bears, 76%, another who didn't see that one coming. And 73% of the early bettors are on the Texans at Denver. So those are the big liabilities so far.
I can't imagine, Dave, that every bookmaker around the shop goes, man, I really hope this is the week Nathan Peterman gets it done for us to save our bacon. It's always one of those fun spots to be in when you're behind the counter. But I know the players are already flush with cash from one of the better weekends they've put together. But if folks are looking to become first-time players at betonline.ag, what are some of the available offers for our loyal Bet the Board listeners?
Loyal Bet the Board listeners, sign up with betonline.ag. On your first deposit, use promo code 75BTB for a 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account and have not taken advantage of the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
That's Dave Mason. You can hear his dulcet tones with us every Wednesday talking college football, every Thursday with the National Football League until we hand out that Lombardi Trophy in early February. Follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, best of luck this weekend, and make sure you dust off that Baker Mayfield jersey on Sunday. You're going to need it, my friend.
I will do. Have a good weekend.
Well, it looks like no surprise there that Dave is going to be donning a Baker Mayfield jersey on Sunday, Mr. Payne.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Be interesting to see where this line goes.
I'm curious as well. But before we get to the last couple of things, we do have a game tonight. Whether people want to watch it or they don't want to watch it, I'm gonna kind of put you on the clock and run a 2-minute drill here because I don't want to spend much more time than that breaking down the 49ers and Raiders. We're looking at the home team, the San Francisco 49ers, a 2.5-point favorite at betonline.ag, total down to 45. The biggest storyline here, of course, C.J. Beathard. Will he or won't he be out there as the starting quarterback, or is this the start of the Nick Mullins era in the Bay Area?
What was the quarterback's last name?
C.J. Beathard.
Beathard, and he's out with a wrist injury. I found that funny. I don't know why.
I was waiting for a little bit of that sophomore humor that was going to come out.
I chuckled this morning when I saw that. I'm like, Jesus, I'm like 15. But I thought it was funny when you break up CJ Beathard's last name and it says beat hard and right next to it, wrist injury. Nick Mullins, second year undrafted quarterback out of Southern Miss, has not had a meaningful snap yet in his career. He's small. He's not overly athletic. I would think it's a downgrade. I'm a little higher on CJ Beathard than most. I think he's shown an ability to at least operate an offense. What's interesting here is Beathard's a really tough dude. So I don't think that's the question, right? We can all be like, oh, he's a gamer. He's tough. Like, he can get out there and play. Obviously, he can get out there and play. I don't think that's the question here. I think it's whether he can grip a football or not. As a quarterback, that's obviously very important. Everything that I was reading said that if this game were Sunday, he would play. On Thursday, it becomes a little dicey. He didn't practice Monday or Tuesday, was extremely limited on Wednesday yesterday. Maybe he wakes up this morning and he's good to go. I don't want to speculate. I don't know. I'm just saying if he can't grip a football, it's tough to be a quarterback. And that would be my only feeling there.
Even against the Raiders defense, huh? I feel like you play quarterback against the Raiders even if you can't grip a football.
I would agree. And right now, if you're Nick Mullins or you're CJ Beathard, you're looking at a defense that can't do much. They don't get after the quarterback, just 54 QB pressures. That's dead last in the NFL. They're having troubles stopping the run. They're having troubles stopping the pass. It doesn't really matter. You can move the ball on Oakland. We've seen that. Offensively, I think is where Oakland's going to have some success. I think that's where if you're backing Oakland, you're saying, hey, this is what they can do. Because I liked what I saw from Derek Carr last week. And I think the offensive line, if you watched, was really healthy for the first time in a long time. And they're also going to get back one of the best guards in the NFL in Osemele tonight. So that offensive line now is the Fort Knox we thought it would be. It's the offensive line we envisioned them having coming into the season. It's the O-line that's been pretty dominant the last few seasons. So Derek Carr looked much better. The other positive here, when you look at what Oakland's doing offensively, they're able to run the ball. They're able to pass the ball. That's an alarm, it sounds like.
Your time management wasn't very good. I gave you 2 minutes in this game, and you've exceeded your quota.
Sorry about that. I think Oakland's going to be able to move the ball through the air here. They're right now fourth in the NFL. 53% of passes are grading successful. Question marks with some health in the secondary. Sherman wants to play. It's a short week. They said that he wouldn't play on short weeks, but I think, you know, let's see if he gets out there. So when you're looking at this game, Mason mentioned there is sharp money on Oakland. There is public money on Oakland. What are you hearing on CJ Beathard?
I'm hearing that he would probably be a long shot to be out there. That I would probably, if I'm setting odds here, I make him, I'm going to call him a 5-2 or 3-1 dog to be the starting quarterback.
Okay. The other thing that you have to like here, I think, for Oakland offensively is look at who they're playing. Carr has had some success this season when he's taken a step back and they haven't faced tough defenses. Now, that always hasn't been the case. When you look at them offensively, they face the second toughest schedule of pass defenses. This is going to be a significant step down in pass defenses. I think Oakland's going to have success moving the ball. I really do. Now, it becomes, can Nick Mullins take advantage of that poor Oakland defense? That becomes a big question. And so if Nick Mullins is out there, and even if he has marginal success, is he going to be able to keep up with the Oakland offense? I've seen some sharp money obviously come in on Oakland. I've seen some sharp money come in on their team total over 20.5. So everything that Mason said is 100% factual in this game.
Yeah, nothing like John Gruden coming out saying, we're looking for more consistency. We're looking for somebody to step up, not only on game day, but during the week. Keep in mind, these two teams have combined for a winning record just once since 2003, are on pace for the worst record for a two-team market since the 1970 merger. Congratulations, Bay Area. You have two gems of football teams that you can enjoy every single Sunday. All right, Payne, we've covered all the biggest games, including the nonsense that we'll see tonight. We've talked to Dave Mason, but where are we going this weekend with our best bet?
No one's going to like this again. It's ugly as hell. I like the Cleveland Browns this week.
Yes! Ugly duckling alert. Yes!
So yes. You know, for me, right now, there's 9 out there. I think that number's fine. I do. But I also don't necessarily know if it's worth running out there and betting it right away. If this got to 9.5, certainly every pro is going to be buying this to 10. Let's see if that presents itself. But at 8.5 or better, I certainly like Cleveland. At what point do the Chiefs have a letdown spot? Like they've
here,
just been,
it's here.
They've just been going and going and going, and the schedule has just been brutal. Very tough schedule. Tyreek Hill, no one thought he would play. Did practice on Wednesday with the groin. I don't know his status right now. It looks like he would shockingly play. It's going to be cold there. He's got the groin injury. For me, I also like kind of fading the national narrative here, and that's that Greg Williams is a bumbling idiot. I think, again, and I don't want to call people soft, but the whole Bounty Gate thing, like we kind of need to get over that. Not only, one, was he kind of made the scapegoat, but two, like all the players were involved and they loved him and they loved doing it. And it still happens everywhere in the league right now. It's just done a lot quieter. So like we need to get over that shtick that like Greg Williams is this horrific guy because he, you know, players were paying each other and he was paying, you know, players to, you know, compile sacks and take guys out. Like it happens in every situation in the NFL right now. I do think we also need to kind of realize what Greg Williams is at this point, and he's a good coach. Now, is he going to be a good head coach? I don't know. Is he propped up for success here? Probably not. I mean, has any coach been successful in Cleveland? So it's not going to be a shock if he's not successful here. But we kind of need to respect him a little bit in this regard. Like, he's won a Super Bowl ring. He won that Super Bowl ring holding, like, one of the most prestigious passers in Peyton Manning to a net 10 points in the Super Bowl. Like, show the guy respect. Like, as abysmal as the Cleveland Browns offense has been, he's got the third most efficient defense in the NFL this year. So like, you know, we get to this stage where we got a lot of Twitter guys and a lot of analytics guys. They're going to hate the Browns no matter what because they removed Sashi from the fold. So that was an analytics guy. I'm all for analytics, but everyone's going to give this team hate now because they removed the analytics guy. I think it's just too many points here. I really do. Freddie Kitchens is going to be interesting to see as the new Browns OC. He is from the Bruce Arians tree. Let's see what he does. We know Bruce Arians is an aggressive guy. Let's see if we get that. Let's see if Greg Williams kind of holds him back. But I think from what I have been told, everyone loves Freddie Kitchens. Players, coaches, and the mindset is there if you've been under the Bruce Arians tree. He's actually a quarterback at Alabama, apparently.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that until I was doing a little reading that he'd actually played there, but I'm not sure how many reps he actually took.
And Arians was his offensive coordinator at the time.
Nice little ties and the connectivity we see through the college and NFL ranks. It is the ugly duckling of the week. We're not afraid to do it around here. The Cleveland Browns, your best bet. Special thanks to Dave Mason for joining us as he does every Thursday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You, of course, can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. You can follow me there at Todd Furman. You can follow Payne at Payne Insider. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Payne, any closing remarks before we button this thing up?
That's it. Let's get the hell out of Dodge.
All right, we're out of Dodge with the Cleveland Browns, and Sunday afternoon, by hook or by crook, we'll see you at the window.